Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We're allowed to be biased, are we not?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, fuck it. It is 2017, which means it's time for the front three, and the gang is all here. Lawrence McKenna, how you doing?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Dave O'Brien here as well.
Buongiorno.
As is Chris Hennage.
Hey.
Happy 2017, guys. New Year's resolution.
Feels good, doesn't it?
Lawrence, you got any resolution you want to share with us all?
1080p up to 4K, huh?
What?
It's a new resolution, mate. Jesus.
Oh no.
Fucking hell.
Not sure. We'll move swiftly on. Dave, have you got an actual New Year's resolution?
To be more organised.
Wow. Okay. I like that. Chris?
Big one.
No, I haven't got any, to be honest.
You got no New Year's resolutions?
No.
Chris is a perfect human. Yeah. Me,
he is... He is the epitome of the perfect man. Lawrence, you got nothing else apart from your TV resolution?
Sorry, mate. Are you absolutely trying to... Are you trying to make out like I need to make a resolution?
No, you know, much like Chris, you know, that you're a perfect man.
Well, maybe I'll control my anger, Adam.
Whoa.
But you better get on with it. Otherwise, it's going to make my resolution tricky.
What's my resolution? I got a great resolution. To do something
640 by 480
every weekend.
Oh, good. What did you start with this weekend?
Well, it didn't count this weekend.
Right, okay. So this weekend, you made an excuse.
This weekend coming, you know.
Right.
Got to say, go and see a new film. Go to like a new place to eat. Maybe like go to a new place in London or do something new, you know.
Go and see a new film.
That counts, doesn't it?
It does not.
Go and do something new, you know? Okay. Don't just sit about doing the same old things, you know? You've got experienced life, Lawrence. You're just talking about your TV resolution, you know? I've got big plans, you know?
Blue sky thinking. When you're in week 32 and you're coming back to me saying, I bought a new TV with a big resolution, then you won't be complaining, will you, mate?
I'll be eating humble pie. Anyway, guys, let's get on with the Premier League review. So much football to get through. Let's start, Dave, with Manchester United. They obviously won 2-0 tonight at West Ham. A controversial win, it has to be said, though. 6 wins in a row now for Jose Mourinho's team. Potentially a helping hand, though, from Mike Dean. Firstly, Sofiane Feghouli sent off for a challenge I don't think anyone thought was actually a red card.
Yeah, I've got to admit, it was the Mike Dean show tonight. I think he made a number of stinky decisions on both sides, you know, for Manchester United and for West Ham, but the red card was a bit silly. The only thing that I can try and defend him of, the angle that he had was kind of behind Feghouli, so he couldn't really see what his feet were doing, whether he was off the ground. It just looked like a very lungy tackle from Feghouli from Mike Dean's angle, but it wasn't a red card. And, if he can't see it, his linesman needs to help him out there, because... Obviously, it changed the game. West Ham started very brightly. They were dominating the ball in the first 15 minutes. And as soon as the red card came, obviously, it completely changed. But United struggled. Their tempo was so, so poor. I think when you're playing against 10 men, you know, you need to move the ball quickly. You need to switch it from side to side. You need to get in between the lines. You need to try and expose the 10 men. And United didn't do that at all. There were so many occasions where there was 5 United players behind the whole West Ham compact 9 outfielders. So you're looking at, like, with the two centre-backs. So you've got Phil Jones, Marcus Rojo, Carrick in between them, and then Herrera and Pogba all goal side of the, you know, the deep block that West Ham were putting out, which was, it was very, very poor. And obviously Mourinho came up trumps, so half-time obviously got out the players, they got to press a bit more, changed it around, bought Darmian off, Mata on, went with a midfield three of Herrera, Mata and Pogba, and put Michael Carrick at centre-back. A very interesting move, but Michael Carrick played the pass forward to Marcus Rashford for the goal. Obviously Rashford made the real difference, stayed nice and wide, and that's the key thing. When you're playing against a team that is, you know, down a man, you want to stretch them wide, you want to have your wide players pretty much standing on the touchline. Of course, on that the right-hand side with Mkhitaryan out there, he was coming inside and Valencia was sort of overlapping and being that outlet. But on the other side, they had two players. Marcus Rojo was very wide, and of course, Marcus Rashford, and his assist for the goal, the first goal, was absolutely fantastic. He did so well to get to the byline and then just stop, and Ogbonna came flying over and he just cut the ball back. And I like to sort of look at how many of Juan Mata's goals have come from pretty much the penalty spot this season from a cutback, because I think that's something that United have been working on as a team, because it's happened, you know, think of the League Cup against game against Manchester City where it was Ander Herrera pullback. Then I think the week later again against another side, I can't remember who it was, but it was a similar thing where it was cut back to the penalty spot and Juan Mata just putting the ball in the back of the net. But credit to Mourinho, I think Mourinho deserves the 3 points because his tactical changes and general getting the players up and motivation was really good.
Got the job done. The second goal as well, though, controversial offside from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, has to be said. I, for one, was fuming. That means, is it 13 goals now he's on for the season in the Premier League?
Should be 14, mate. Should be 14.
That's what I was going to say. It potentially evens itself out, though, because Dave, he had his own goal disallowed just a few days ago against Middlesbrough. Kind of one of his classic, essentially, kung fu kicks. But it was disallowed by the referee for dangerous play. I mean, did you agree with that one?
Yeah, I think I did, to be honest. I think I'm one of the only Man United fans in world football that thinks that was a foul. You know, I think it was dangerous because of the way, the height of where he's getting his foot, and it's an open foot as well. You know, the studs are exposed. It's dangerous. And unfortunately, you know, you look at if that's on any other place on the pitch, that's a free kick. So for me, yeah, I think that was the right call. But obviously tonight, the goal that was definitely, you know, offside. Oh, as well, the crazy thing as well, if you look at Paul Pogba's position, so Paul Pogba is standing a good yard, Zlatan is on miles. The verge, so, but he's offside, Pogba's miles offside, and then he pretty much blocks Winston Reid putting a challenge in. Again, it's all this active, not active bollocks that's just, they need to sort out.
Just offside. He's offside.
It's just offside. They need to go back to that old thing, because there was another goal this weekend.
Why?
I can't remember who scored it. That was,
yeah,
another
there was
one
a
where,
second phase of play, wasn't there, where he became active. Was it Arsenal? No.
No, it was against Liverpool. It was a Jermaine Defoe chance where Ngoy, is it Ngoy? Yeah. He goes, and Dong, makes a slight motion to go to the ball, and Jermaine Defoe comes screaming through. And Ndoye's miles offside.
Yeah, yeah.
And he makes the motion to go to the ball. And what, if he stops, is that okay? It's just like, you know, if he makes that move, the goalkeeper sees him makes that move, the defenders that are defending it are seeing him make that move, so they're making another decision in their head before going, shit, Jermaine Defoe's onside. And I think it's a bit of a mess.
It's never 100.
There was another one as well. I can't remember where it was, but it was all about the phases of play and when people are on or offside. It could have been the Arsenal game. I can't remember. But it did end in a goal. And if Mignolet hadn't been off his line so quick, it could have ended quite differently.
It's never black and white. I mean, this Valdez versus Ibrahimovic one, Lawrence. A lot of people saying that Ibrahimovic was, you know, a good 2 meters or so away from Valdez. His foot had lowered by the time he'd made contact. So therefore, is it still dangerous play?
I think because he ended up colliding with Valdez, people are saying it's more dangerous. When you look at it, how Webb is not helping the argument, when you look at it from an angle, he's a couple of feet away from Valdez when he does make contact with the ball, foot goes down, then he collides with him in the end, which looks like a less dangerous thing. I think Valdez, I mean, you know, you can't really accuse a player because you don't really know what I'm thinking, but I would have said he stayed down because the ball nestled nicely in his net. Dave and I had this conversation before. You know, do you ref the player or do you ref the situation? And ultimately, everyone else is right in the sense that you have to ref the situation. But when I'm judging it personally based on that, I think I probably would have, as a referee, you think, well, would I have given that one? Because we know that Zlatan is in control of his body there. We know that he's got distance. It's not that the referee is wrong. It's just that in retrospect, maybe, or, you know, with the clarity of hindsight, is probably a good idea to give the goal. At the same time, you know, you sort of say, well, we're supposed to play within the spirit of the game. And I think Zlatan is one of those players who's always sort of pushed the boundaries of the game and pushed the way that the game can be played. And I think he feels it's necessity to have his foot at that height to be able to give it that deft touch, which he does, to get it in the back of the net and get his foot down. Ultimately, we know, actually, that in this situation, Zlatan was maybe right to do it because he was doing it right. The problem is he could then exploit that situation to foul someone else another time and say, well, I was, you know, it's the same as that other time. So ultimately, the blanket rule has to apply.
I think it was a goal, but I don't blame the referee from the angle he was at, from the speed of it all for disallowing it at the end of the day. But regardless, Manchester United now, Dave, that is 6 wins in a row. Starting to look like United of an old, a team that expects to win. I mean, they're 1 point off the top 4 now. Have your expectations changed at all in recent weeks now they've been on this run? Are you looking beyond the top 4 towards sort of a top 2-3 finish?
Nah, I think top 4 is what United will go for this season. I think there's going to be another bad spell of results, you know, maybe March time or something. But United are looking very, very good at the moment. And they're looking like they're again, today they were really poor. I thought they were really, really poor. Zlatan had a very poor game, obviously scored the disallowed goal, but his build-up play was shocking. He was coming too deep. Again, when you're playing a team that's defending with 10 men, you want your striker to be a striker. And at those times where he's dropping into like central midfield, you're thinking, what the hell are you doing? Let those lads do their job. You do your job. You put the ball in the back of net. And in recent weeks, he's been good at creating chances for his teammates. And none of that today. None of that today. He was very, very, very poor. But I think Ander Herrera had a very good game. Just touching on one more player who's absolutely fantastic. I think he's really growing this season. And probably one of the most underrated players in the Premier League in terms of what work he's doing for United. And it's going undercover. You know, Michael Carrick gets his plaudits for, you know, his impact on this United team, his calming influence. But arguably, the reason why Paul Pogba's finally hitting form is because Ander Herrera is really carrying their team, carrying United in a defensive sense in terms of making interceptions, winning tackles. In terms of interceptions, he's made more than any other Premier League midfielder, even more than N'Golo Kante. So that's a really big statement for Ander Herrera this season, that Mourinho's come in, he's finally hitting a bit of consistent form. That was a problem last season and the season before. We saw moments of Ander Herrera be wonderful against Liverpool at Anfield. He was absolutely fantastic. But the next week, he wouldn't turn up. This season, every single week, he's putting in performances. No matter where he plays, at 6, at 8, at 10, wherever, he's just been absolutely fantastic.
It does feel like the top 6 is starting to pull away now, especially over this Christmas period. There have been a few good results for some of the bigger teams. I mean, obviously, they're not without their flaws. But in contrast to last year, each team looks a much stronger proposition. I mean, Chris, do you think it's getting interesting now at the halfway point as the table shapes up?
It is. I don't know if Manchester United have a title challenge in them. I think, much like Gary Neville, I think they've given themselves too much to do in that regard. the closeness with the league is still important, though. I mean, it's how Chelsea handle that game in hand to me. I think there's only, 5-6 points between first and second, and then I think 7 between City. So if Chelsea win that game in hand that they've got now, that changes things a little bit in my mind, at least in terms of how close the whole thing is and how believable it is. Because you've got to think as well that Chelsea are going to drop points at some stage this season, and how they respond to that is going to be important. Because if it's a situation where it's maybe just bad luck, then you can easily kind of consign that to being a blip and move forward. But if they are kind of found out in the way that some teams have been in the past when they've had such a sort of regimented style that seems so flawless, then it could once again open the league up, I think.
Yeah, it does feel like a little bit of a mini league almost in the top 6. Of course, Chelsea at the top of that tree, equaling the Premier League record for consecutive wins in a single season. Now an astonishing 13 wins in a row. Stoke, though, presented perhaps one of the tougher challenges on that run, Lawrence?
Yeah, because I think that what Stoke had done was worked out roughly what the system Chelsea were using was, and looked directly to counter that. I also think they've employed Peter Crouch much better in recent weeks, firstly against Liverpool, secondly, obviously, against Chelsea as well. And I think it's worked out quite well because he brings other players into play quite nicely, takes out the defenders who maybe aren't so mobile, such as maybe Gary Cahill in recent weeks, and basically allows Stoke to bypass the midfield that looks so well stacked in Chelsea's favour. So they played it very well. But ultimately, I also think it comes down to the fact that's the nice contrast for Conte, is that he's got the option, if you like, to go a bit more direct with someone like Willian and someone like Diego Costa. And I also think it's testament to the fact that Willian's been out the side for a good few weeks now with personal issues. People have sort of said, well, you know, Moses perform ahead of him. And essentially now they've got two really strong players out on that right wing, or on the left wing if they want to swap them over, but more on the right wing, who basically make up the best left wing in the league, right? And best right wing in the league. I think that is the best right wing in the league if you look at Azpilicueta, Moses and Willian. It's hard to think of a better right wing in the league.
No, it's hard to disagree with that, I think. I mean...
Anyone? No?
No. I'm not disagreeing. I fully agree. Peter Crouch was actually the first Englishman to score for Stoke in 56 games. How about that?
What?
Yeah. He's back, mate. He's back. He's on top. He is on top.
To be fair, though, if it was the British Isles, would Johnny Walters as the...
But it's not, Dave. It's England.
That wouldn't be right. Johnny Walters is Republic of Ireland.
He's from the Republic.
Good point.
Good point. So, yeah, it doesn't matter. First Englishman, the Football Republic of Ireland. Games. Of course, as you know, Chris mentioned there, with that game in hand, Chelsea can equal Arsenal's all-time record of 14.
Jonathan Walters, sorry. What? Sorry, guys. Jonathan Walters was born in Merseyside. So that is a load of shit.
Wait, what are you trying to say, Dave?
I'm saying that no, it's all right, mate. Sorry. Kids continue.
So wait. Jonathan
Walters...
But he's
not technically an English man.
Technically, Jonathan Walters is English.
Well, is he?
When you say the word technically, whatever you say afterwards is true. But I mean,
that's how it works. That is true.
That is, but you know what I mean.
Technically, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, yes. So I think still, though, Peter Crouch holds this great record. And Peter, yeah. The fact is also that Peter Crouch has looked much more impressive and made Stoke City look much more of an impressive side than maybe they looked in previous weeks. It's that sort of physical, non-physical side of Peter Crouch which makes him such a good asset to the team. I'm also wondering if he's put himself in the shop window, mate.
I love how that became contentious. I was expecting just to give a mildly interesting fact, put it out there. All of a sudden it becomes a debate.
Wait a minute.
As Chris alluded to earlier, Chelsea, they've got that game in hand now. They can equal Arsenal's all-time record of 14 consecutive wins against none other than Tottenham Hotspur on Wednesday evening. Tottenham side will be going into the match higher on confidence. They obviously beat Watford yesterday 4-1, consecutive 4-1 wins on the row, and four wins in a row over the Christmas period. I think Spurs starting to hit their stride now. You know, I was saying beforehand about how they'd gone through that difficult period. This was a chance for them to build some form, build some momentum. I think we've seen them play their way into their stride, essentially. Ali and Eriksen obviously contributing with goals. Ali, I think, has got 5 goals in his last 3 games in the league. Harry Kane also close to his best. 2 great goals against Watford. The less said about the penalty miss against Southampton, the better. And obviously, almost everyone, bar Edgar Romero, is now back fit for the squad. So we're better equipped in terms of the depth of the squad. I mean, Kieran Trippier coming in for the suspended Kyle Walker with 2 great assists against Watford as well. So we're going into the game in a good moment against Chelsea. I doubt the Blues are going to be as obliging as Watford or Southampton. Watford very poor in defence.
Watford, what they call Watford, was a training match.
Yeah,
I mean it was.
They
really
seem
poor.
To, you know, they seem to hold firm for 10-15 minutes, and they seem to throw in the towel after that first goal. Their heads went down. They have got a lot of injuries, a lot of key players missing. To be fair to them. But I think Watford fans will be rightly aggrieved that the lack of fight they showed. They seem to just roll over, essentially. The goals the Spurs scored weren't particularly world-class. They were just sort of let in by the Watford defence, it has to be said.
With regards to preparation for this game, though, Adam, which is obviously a massive game for both sides, especially, do you think it's a little bit unfair that one side gets 24 hours on the other? Do you find that a little bit weird that this whole scheduling thing? You can't just schedule matches. Every team plays. The fact is that if you're going to play such closely scheduled games, then 24 hours does make a difference.
Of course, I mean it's not ideal, and I think Chelsea have had a pretty good time of it over the festive period compared to some other teams. I mean, we'll come on to Southampton a little later on, but they've played 3 fixtures in 6 days, essentially, which just seems ridiculous.
Zero points.
Yeah, which just seems a little bit harsh. Hopefully it won't have too much of an impact. I mean, as I said, we managed to, through suspension, managed to rotate the likes of Carl Walker, Toby Alderweireld was in as well. But, you know, Kane was obviously brought off late on in the game alongside Ali. Playing against Watford allowed us to rest some key players in key moments. So hopefully we won't see too much of an impact of that. We won't see fatigue. That's the word I'm looking for. But it is a big game.
Well, both sides are quite intense in that sense. So
yes. I mean, Dave, how do you see this one playing out? Because three at the back could be something to look out for. Pochettino's been experimenting with it. He played 3-4-2-1 against Watford. I mean, how do you think he should potentially set up at home against this Chelsea side?
Well, I think he's got to go with three at the back. I think that Sunderland used that maybe a few weeks ago, and that really caused Chelsea a bit of trouble because it was pretty much man for man. I think Sunderland set up in a 3-4-3 as well. But this Spurs team's really interesting how they play it. It's more of a, I'd say it was more of a 3-5-2 that they played against Watford with obviously Lloris in goal, Dier, Alderweireld and Wimmer as the back three. Then Wanyama sitting ahead of that. Then obviously Trippier on the right hand side, Ben Davies on the left hand side. And then Eriksen sort of sitting next to Dele Alli, but it was very, very fluid. Where one of those players, either Ali and Eriksen, would join Son and Harry Kane in the final third. So it was a really good system, and it will cause Chelsea some problems. I think Chelsea have done well to sort of cover their weakness in a way that they are quite... Essentially, they've got two players in there, you'd say, in central midfield, that this Spurs team will outnumber them in that zone. But then it will also keep the strength going forward with playing Son, who likes to drift wide, and Kane, who likes to go wide. I think that was something that Kane did very, very well against Watford. Watford also playing a 3-5-2, but Kane drifted into the sort of inside right channel towards the right wing at sometimes and picked up the ball and scored from that position, got an assist from that position. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that back three of Chelsea deal with the movement of Kane, deal with the movement of Son, but also the runners from midfield. Dele Alli is banging in form at the moment. He's very, very confident. Obviously hit the bar with another shot, but scoring twice. And I feel that could cause Chelsea trouble. Who picks that up? Does Kante track that? Does Matic track that run? Or does one of the back three pick that up? But again, if the back three picks it up, then you're dealing with a 3v3 at the back that Conte may not want. So it's going to be a great game. And I think the space behind Victor Moses as well could be slightly exploited with Danny Rose's energy and pace going forward if he's fit. Because he did... Did he go off injured, or was it just giving him a rest, Adam?
No, he's going to be fit for this one. I think it should be really interesting to see how they're going to match up. I think, as you say, Dave, if he does play free at the back, Danny Rose and Kyle Walker are obviously so important. They've become so integral to the way Spurs do go forward. It does give them license to bomb up the wings. Victor Wanyama can sort of drop back and sort of fill in the hole in defence if needs be. So I'm feeling quite...
Two informed strikers as well. Let's not forget that. Two in-form strikers.
Yeah, Diego Costa, always a man to be feared. He's been exceptional. So Spurs do have a second best defensive record in the league, though. And if we do play three at the back, I'd be confident that...
Got the best?
Is it Chelsea? No?
Probably. I was wondering, I hope you knew.
I believe it is Chelsea. But obviously last time the sides met... Chelsea winning 2-1 at Stamford Bridge. Tottenham, I think, were low on confidence at that point. Obviously, as I said, we're in a different moment now. It's a chance to make a statement against the top six. We have struggled. We've only won one of the five games we've played so far. So, you know, only really pressing against Man City at home, playing at White Hart Lane, it is a chance for us to cut that gap. I think it's 10 points at the moment to try and halt Chelsea's momentum and obviously stop them equaling Arsenal's record run, which would be nice.
Yeah,
that would be
thank
nice
God too. You guys could come along and defend that for Arsenal.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, a bit noise there.
It's all right, lads, we got you. Oh,
I think given the recent history, the fact that Chelsea effectively ended any of our title hopes last season, the fact they ended our unbeaten run this season, I think Spurs fans will be,
Spurs really,
to stop Chelsea.
Spurs really hate each other, don't you?
We spoke about this on the bonus podcast with Rory Jennings from Chelsea Fans Channel TV, as I believe it's called. I feel like
it's called Chelsea Fan TV, mate.
Is it? I thought it was CFC TV. Maybe it's Chelsea Football Club TV. Maybe. We'll never
know. I think Chelsea Fans Channel TV is.
I think there's another channel that does that. But yeah, the animosity seems to have grown in recent years. Personally, I think, you know, I don't think the teams ever liked each other, but the last couple of years it has taken up a notch. So it's going to be a tasty, tasty game on Wednesday night. I'm going to go for a Spurs win, I think. I'm feeling it.
All right, mate.
I think it's going to happen. Anyone else care to make a prediction?
Credit to you for being so positive.
Thank you. Anyone else care to make a bold prediction?
Spurs win.
2-1 Spurs.
Oh, get in. Chris, what do you say?
That'll help my documentary.
It's at White Hart Lane, isn't it?
It is, mate. It is.
It is.
2-0 Chelsea.
Brilliant. Thanks.
lovely banter.
Moving on.
No, I only say that. I don't say that to be facetious. I say it just because I think when Spurs play at White Hart Lane, there can sometimes be a lot of pressure put on the players. And if there's one thing I feel like I've seen consistently with this Chelsea team during the winning run, it's that they seem to handle the mental pressure of things very well. They seem very fortified as a group. And I think if there's a bad start to that game for the Spurs players, I think they'll kind of crawl inside themselves, which will only kind of push Chelsea on.
I'm going to say the complete opposite to Chris and White Hart Lane. It can become like a cauldron. The atmosphere can be fantastic. Spurs haven't been great on the road this season. There were back-to-back wins against Watford and Southampton, but like I said, they're very obliging opponents. I think at White Hart Lane, that's where this season we can hurt the bigger teams, and hopefully we can show that against Chelsea. It's going to be tasty. It's going to be very tasty. Let's move on to Sunderland. Liverpool, though, a 2-2 draw, Lawrence. Obviously, drop points for the Reds, who could only close the gap on Chelsea to 5 points. 2 penalties for Jermaine Defoe as Sunderland came back from behind twice. Jurgen Klopp at a loss to explain these dropped points, Lawrence. Have you got any explanation?
Do I have an explanation? Yeah, I think I do. Liverpool... I've thought quite a lot about this over the last few days. Liverpool have the predisposition at the moment still to drop games. And it's something that Jurgen Klopp's trying to get rid of. I think it's different to the time when they were dropping games against other lower opposition, say, under Brendan Rodgers. Because I think Klopp is still training this side. And I think what he hasn't sometimes factored in, and I think Pep Guardiola is slightly having a similar experience, is the team is playing up, and not only that, but not being able to, not having a solution for when Liverpool need to break those sides down. And too often, I think Liverpool breathe out very early in games and sort of go, oh, we've scored one, we'll just continue. And then their side comes back, and too often that plays out. I think Klopp's trying to stop the players from getting into that mentality. But it's difficult, especially against sides where you have to battle. I think, I can't remember who was that referenced it. It may even have been Jurgen Klopp himself talking about the FA Cup-esque sort of feeling around some of these sides when sides play up to the bigger teams. I don't think Liverpool necessarily have a way of dealing with that right now. Having said that, there are still some positives in there. You know, the fact that Liverpool still play some lovely attacking football. Coutinho is still to come back, considering he's been out for this time. Mane played reasonably well. I still think he's trying to find a better spot than that. Lallana had a good game. I don't think Liverpool looked as solid at the base of midfield without the partnership that Henderson normally has with the likes of Wijnaldum in there. Overall, I think there were small conspiring factors which meant that Liverpool didn't come away with a win. Not only that, I do think Liverpool were lucky at times not to have goals scored against them. Jermaine Defoe broke through. Mignolet looks a lot more commanding in his box, came off the line excellently to come out and smother Jermaine Defoe. And also, I think it was Emre Can who had his arm out and the ball quite clearly hit his arm and could have been called as a penalty. So Liverpool lucky to get away with a 2-2 draw here. People question why I, time after time, criticise Liverpool after games, and I still think that there's a lot to work on for this Liverpool team, not least the complacency.
Yeah, it sounds like you're sort of accusing them of a naivety in a way.
I don't think it's naive. I think it's that they don't quite have a solution for the problems that are being presented yet. You sort of heard similar post-match interviews from Klopp and Pep Guardiola, who both seemed a little bit confused as to why they were having to stand there and tell the journalist, yeah, it wasn't great. But
do you think,
I mean, the
Liverpool
got the result today.
I know you point
and
to
Klopp,
the...
and Klopp made the point that Pep maybe should have made, which was Liverpool, they would feel different if they got away with a win, but ultimately they still would have made the same mistakes.
I know, obviously, you're pointing to the Emre Can handball as a sign Liverpool were perhaps slightly fortunate, but at the same time, Liverpool created a lot of chances. I think it was 21 shots in total they had during the game. Manone obviously put in a great performance. Do you not think that is a... But do you not think that's an encouraging sign, something to look towards in terms of, okay, Liverpool unlucky. You're saying Liverpool were lucky not to lose, but were they? Is it not really the other way around?
I mean, you could paint it either way. I think if you're looking to improve, then you'll probably say that Liverpool were lucky not to lose. I also think that, you know, if Liverpool are looking to become a title winning side or a side who are challenging for the title, then it's games like these where you say they were lucky not to lose, not unlucky not to win. And I think people mistake maybe realistic criticism for criticism of a side just for the sake of it. I think Klopp still isn't happy with the team. And I think as long as that happens, then that there should be other people who are not happy with the side. I think he realistically also sees that Liverpool, they aren't playing particularly well at the moment. I see where Sturridge fits into this side. I also see that he causes issues sometimes because the movement is different to any other player that Liverpool have on the team. And sometimes that's a positive for an impact sub, say, when they've been used to Origi and Mane and whoever else running at them. But starting a game, it can be a little bit difficult sometimes because it means that sometimes attacks break down too early or they're looking to get the ball into a position which maybe the side's not set up to do.
Yeah, it's funny with Sturridge that no matter the option on, he goes to shoot almost always. But having said that, he did look dangerous. He did create a few chances. Did suffer an injury, though. Disappointing, having been his first start since October. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not sure how long he's out for yet, I believe.
So weak.
What was that, Dave?
He's so weak. It was like nothing. It was a nothing challenge.
Yeah, but Dave, come on.
It really looked like... He just didn't fancy it. Like his body language was, he took the knock and that was it, he'd done. It was really odd. Like, it was a really odd thing. He walked off the pitch, like, he looked absolutely fine and he was just like, all right, I'm done. And potentially it's going back to that mental thing, you know, that mental block that he had before about his injuries and so forth, which
he doesn't
potentially
know what pain is and what is serious pain, you know?
That's the problem.
You agree with that, Lawrence? I mean, I think, a bit of a harsh assessment, or...?
I mean, I also think that you can conflate people's comments. It was a nothing, what you would generally call a nothing challenge. But then, and like you say, it probably is classed as weak. I do also have sympathy for Sturridge because he has been through some fairly serious injuries, which he's had to come back from. I still go back to the idea that I think people treat different players differently. And I think Sturridge sometimes gets harsh treatment. And I think sometimes he struggles with that. It's six and one half dozen of the other with Sturridge. I think he causes some of his own problems mentally. That's very difficult to comment on because obviously every player is different. I also think, therefore, some players will deliberately go into Sturridge harder. And he leaves himself open to that. And I think Klopp is trying to counter that. Whether it'll be effective or not, I don't know. I think it also makes it difficult to sell a player like Sturridge for the price that maybe you would want. Because to say to a team, you know, you're getting a consistent striker here, would be a lie. You know, he's one of the five. He beat Fernando Torres to 50 goals at Liverpool. That's no mean feat. He's beaten a number of top players to 50 goals at Liverpool. And there's a reason why. I also just think maybe if he went to another side and maybe it's a good time for him to move to another team, that's not me saying I want him to leave, then it would be a good time for him to go because, you know, it's very clear that there are certain aspects of his game that don't fit into his Liverpool team. It is also that Liverpool maybe then would need to find a replacement and that could be a trickier task than selling Daniel Sturridge.
Mm. Could be a pressing issue if Sturridge does leave and obviously with Mane off to the African Cup of Nations, you know, they could need...
Origi's done a very reasonable job.
Yeah.
Origi's done a good job.
I like Origi.
I like Divock.
Some don't.
Who doesn't, mate?
I'm not saying names. I don't say names. Is he better than Anthony Martial, though? That's the question. Anyway, Chris, let's talk about Sunderland. David Moyes.
Do you not like David Origi? I like him. I don't think he's as good as Anthony Martial. Oh,
shouldn't have mentioned it. Shouldn't have mentioned it. Another contentious
Adam, stop
point.
Stop stirring it.
Sorry.
Your New Year's resolution should be stop stirring the pot of hate.
Keep stirring it, Adam.
I don't want to stir the pot of hate. I want to talk about Sunderland, guys. Chris, David Moyes, surely will be pleased with this performance, coming off the back of a dismal 4-1 defeat at Burnley.
Yeah, massively. And in so many ways, that's what made it all the more bizarre that he chose to get on the defensive in his press conference afterwards and talk about the fact that, you know, if he was German, that maybe he would be kind of hailed for what he's doing. I think he's a weird man. I think he's a bizarre man that seems to find consistent paranoia within everything that he does and everything that's said to him. In terms of Sunderland, I think you can't stress enough how much they've improved, though, when you consider how many players they've got out injured as well. Jan Kirchhoff, Jordan Pickford, these are all kind of key players for Sunderland that are missing, and they're still managing to pick up points. And that's really the most important thing, is that as long as you can keep improving that points total, that's all that matters. Now, unfortunately, they'll miss Didier and Dong when he goes away to the African Cup of Nations. I think he was fantastic against Liverpool. He really is someone that's still growing, still developing. He's very raw in that sense. But I think he is well suited to the Premier League as a player in general. But overall, yeah, a fairly solid performance, and one that they might look at as having scraped something, but I don't think they'll care if it keeps them up at the end of the season.
I think they did exactly the right things against Liverpool. And at times, their play looked as good as Liverpool and matched it. Looked nice and expansive. I think Jermaine Defoe is turning into one of the elder statesmen of the game in England, or he has already turned into that. And I think some of his comments after the game sounded really well measured and exactly the kind of thing that you want to hear from someone who's so prominent in the side. And David Moyes should look to players like that, because it's very rare that someone who can be so downbeat has someone who seems so measured in his comments.
Yeah, good result, I think.
yeah, whatever, good result.
But it's a good result considering the injury problems. I know David Moyes doesn't help himself, but, they've got home games back-to-back now against Stoke next and Burnley. Chance for revenge on Burnley, of course. Maybe build some momentum as they look to extend their 10-year stay in the Premier League. But speaking of managers not helping themselves with their post-match comments, we do have to talk about Pep Guardiola, who's caused a bit of a stir, I think it's fair to say, Lawrence. He's caused a stir. Man City winning 2-1 today against Burnley. They're up to third. A narrow win, though. Another red card, a third for Fernandinho this season, which made things difficult for the hosts. But after the game, Guardiola, in an interview with BBC, didn't exactly seem delighted despite getting the 3 points. It was a slightly awkward interview. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, I do recommend checking it out.
It
is the definition of passive-aggressive, I think. Very short answers. Really not happy with Rob Palmer from the BBC. That's questions.
I don't know if he was on that. Did you really think he was on that? I think he came across more as just sort of brooding and sort of frustrated than anything. Because I actually think Rob Palmer did a good job of interviewing.
Oh, 100%.
Like, he clearly took him down a good alley and asked all the right questions and didn't seem to duck any question. The only thing I thought was frustrating was he didn't press him, and you slightly want to see him press him a little bit, don't you? He changed the subject quite nicely sometimes, and Pep got away with it.
Yeah, I think it's nothing new. Pep Guardiola, I think we know this is his attitude. He is quite passive aggressive with the way he deals with the media, but I just feel like it doesn't really help him. I don't think it gives a good impression. And I thought what was interesting afterwards was that the journalist Rob Palmer said, Guardiola said to him specifically after the interview, it's nothing personal. And Palmer described him as a man on a mission. I mean, what do you think he's trying to accomplish, potentially, Lawrence, by behaving in this manner in post-match interviews?
Well, I think he's first of all shown his frustration. And I think certain journalists are going to be sympathetic with that, because actually I think what Guardiola realises is what he's giving the BBC there is excellent copy, and also an excellent interview that a lot of people will go and look at. And to some extent that is that's part of the relationship that currently exists between the managers and the press, is that it's sort of like, well, you're going to give us a good soundbite. And Pep Guardiola's just given him sort of one long soundbite, if you like, or sort of very, something in that sense is quite memeable. And so Rob Palmer's going to be quite happy because it makes him look quite good. And so to that end, essentially, he's sort of keeping the press on side by showing his real frustration. And some people are going to appreciate it because some people think, well, maybe he should have been more measured after the game. But some press will also say, well, at the same time, it's about image management. And if he's, you know.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sports ad free. That's Amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If he keeps the press happy, then the press will report him more favourably, and therefore, actually, this was a good move from Pep, because Pep will have won some people over with what seems like quite a raw, honest expression of Pep's emotion.
Well, here's a short transcript. I'll play the role of Pep Guardiola, Lawrence. You can be journalist Rob Palmer.
Okay.
Okay,
and
you go.
Everyone, okay, just everyone just get into their characters. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Pep, your thoughts on the game?
We won. We are so happy.
Would you like to expand upon that?
No, it's enough.
It was an emotive day, wasn't it? For the players, for the fans, and for the manager as well?
Yes. Happy New Year.
Expand upon that. That's what I find funny is he says, yes, Happy New Year. And then he goes, yeah, expand upon that. Tell me, first of all, about the red card. And this is where I think Rob Palmer did well. He managed to move it away from that awkwardness and sort of towards the weakness of Fernandinho. So he's sort of giving... This is, I think, the problem here, is he's giving Pep Guardiola the chance to deflect. And that's what my character motivation is. Okay, yeah, what were your thoughts on the red card?
You are the journalist. You can see it and you can explain it.
I don't get paid to explain it. I get paid to ask you.
Me neither. I'm here about the games, not the red cards and so on.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I mean, I kind of went for a weird French-Dutch hybrid there towards the end.
No, it was fantastic. It really was a classic Ronald Koeman.
Thank you.
I've got some good news and bad news for you.
Oh, go on.
Good news is you can do a Tom Jones impression. Bad news is you can't do a Pep Guardiola one.
It was Pep Guardiola, really, by the way, the of Tom Jones. It was
okay.
I'm glad that you picked up on that, Chris. Thank you.
It was Tom Jones playing Pep Guardiola.
Exactly.
Right. Badly.
Anyway, so there you have it. Very terse. Chris, I mean, what did you, aside from the Tom Jones impersonation, try and put that outside of your head for a moment. What do you make of Pep Guardiola? Because this feels like it's starting to become a running theme that, you know, the British media and particularly the British public and football fans are starting to realise that this is Pep Guardiola's character in press conferences and the like, and they don't seem too receptive towards it.
He's been that way for a while, though. He was that way in Germany, he was that way in Spain. I think in some ways there's a different expectation from the press in England. I think you're, as a coach, as a player, you're almost expected to play the game a bit more, in inverted commas, kind of be a bit more friendly, be a bit more willing to talk about things in depth at every opportunity. And I just think today, honestly, having watched the exchange, I think he's just frustrated. I think he's looking at it as a poor performance, and that's, whether that's right or wrong, I think that's how he gauges where the team is at in terms of its timeline, is that he is in so many ways a perfectionist and wants to see a step forward with every game that passes. And if he doesn't see that, then he's going to have that bleed over into his post-match. Now, whether that's professional or whether that's acceptable, I think as long as he answers the questions, that's all you can really ask of him. I think certainly it's awkward for someone in Rob Palmer's position, or for any media person in that position. I don't think it changes the fact that, again, he asked very good questions, so you can't follow his end. The difficulty is that sometimes he just won't want to talk, and you have to kind of just accept that.
He also came out afterwards, apparently, and spoke about how he's going to be at Man City for 3 years, but this is the beginning of the end of his career in some ways. He's on the way to retirement already, which people seem to seize upon and find quite interesting, quite strange, really. On the pitch, though, Dave, as I said, Fernandinho with his third red card of the season, no real arguments there, I think, in terms of that sending off. But again, as Chris says there, Guardiola frustrated with another middling, potentially, performance from Man City.
Yeah, definitely the levels that Pep Guardiola had got in the first, eight games when City were running away with the title, it appeared to be, they've just not got to that same point. And I think there is some issues in there, the midfield, obviously. Fernandinho, what a crazy thing to do. How many times do players need to know that you can't jump off your feet and try and win the ball front on? It's a technical issue.
Well, you can't if Marcus Rowe.
Obviously, but Marcus Rowe was trying to get off for Christmas, wasn't he? He was trying to be like, I'll go back to Argentina. Get some decent beef or something like that.
There are a few instances where Marcus Rojo has gotten away with outrageous
There was two in December where he should have been given a straight red card. And it was terrible. It was a terrible, terrible challenge for Marcus Rojo. But yeah, I don't understand why. He's mental. He's absolutely crazy. He does all that, he does crazy things every game. But with Fernandinho, he's quite a calculated footballer. He's a ball player. He understands the game. He understands where to move.
Three red cards this season for Fernandinho.
It's mental. I don't understand that link between him losing his plot and him being that Fernandinho that we love to watch. So it's been a big issue for Manchester City. But I think the thing that went well for them today was obviously Guardiola dropping Sergio Aguero, or not playing Sergio Aguero following his suspension, and then bringing him off the bench because he looked very, very hungry. Him, De Bruyne and Sterling were looking very, 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 very good on the counter-attack in that second half. Arguably, should have scored a few more goals together. But yeah, City, it looks a bit odd because Burnley potentially could have won that game. Andre Gray had two big chances in the last 10 minutes. Ashley Barnes missed a pretty easy header, I think it was. So there is problems with the City side. And obviously, Pep having to go back to Yaya Toure because Gundogan's injured, because Fernandinho is now suspended. He's got Fernando. He's not the greatest ball player and not a Guardiola player, in my personal opinion, in terms of he does not that smart upstairs in terms of that where he's playing the pass. So it's going to be tough in the next few weeks without Fernandinho again, because he's probably going to get an extended ban on what they had last time. So he's in a bit of a mess, Pep Guardiola, and he will have to think of another solution to this problem, because against Liverpool, City again were very, very poor, playing a bit of a silly formation, playing that back three, the two defensive midfielders, and it just doesn't work.
It is worth saying that Liverpool game was a bit of a weird one. Liverpool played it very well, but at the same time, we're also let off by City numerous times.
But Liverpool, they did what they had to do. They nicked that goal at a brilliant. That counter attack was absolutely fantastic. And I think the thing that made me feel a bit more afraid of Liverpool winning the title was that they looked defensively quite organised and strong after they got that lead. And I think that's something Liverpool need to do, and that's what they didn't do against Sunderland today, unfortunately.
That's why I didn't understand why they didn't do it against Sunderland. The big problem for Liverpool is, and I think that what Liverpool dealt with quite well, was they had Klavan and Lovren at the back. And again, they had that against Sunderland, but the problem was that Sunderland attacked Liverpool's shape in a very different way. And I think, in many ways, City played into Liverpool's hands and allowed Klavan and Lovren to read the play quite nicely. Whereas when you body up against Liverpool, they don't like it.
As for Liverpool's crosstown rivals, Everton, a big win for them, 3-0 against Southampton. Ronald Koeman against his former club, of course, Dave. Substitute Ener Valencia, the inspiration for them as they extend their unbeaten run to an amazing 3 games.
Yeah, and Valencia made a decent impact coming off the bench, but I think it was all about Lukaku and finding Lukaku's feet. I think that's something Everton have potentially struggled with in recent, before this little run of form, was getting Lukaku back involved in the play. You go to all of the goals, Lukaku plays a part in it. Absolutely fantastic pull-up play for the first goal, getting the ball wide, and obviously having the header on target that saved and the rebounds put in. And you go to the third goal, absolutely brilliant. What a goal that is. Lukaku, absolutely perfect. Obviously, Southampton making an error at the back, but Lukaku letting the ball run across him and smash it into the top of the goal. I think if they can continue building this team around Lukaku, but playing to his strengths. He isn't a traditional target man, but he's getting quite good at when they ping the ball into his feet and he runs and they run off him and then he finds them. So there's definitely strengths there, and that's what Ronald Koeman needs to do, identify those strengths and push on.
What about Southampton, though? It's 3 defeats in a row now for them, conceding 9. A miserable Christmas and New Year. Klopp, after the game, pointing to the fact 3 fixtures in 6 days, as I mentioned earlier, hasn't
helped. You didn't win the first one, mate.
You what?
You didn't win the first one, though, did he, mate?
He didn't win the first one?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You can't say you can't say 3 fixtures in 6 days and then say you didn't do anything on the first fixture.
I suppose that's a good point, Lawrence. That it's all about that first one, but in terms of the next,
well, yeah, two, but you can't
say they're feeling the effects, Lawrence. They look dead on their feet out there. They were dead on their feet. I understand what you're saying. The first one, they've got no excuses, but he's saying now they're feeling the effects. Obviously, they got hammered by Spurs 4-1 at home. This is another embarrassing defeat, I think, in terms of the how comfortable Everton were. Essentially, I know the first game. Perhaps they should perform better, but I mean, you were saying it yourself earlier, Lawrence. It's harsh to ask a team to play that many games, no?
Well, the problem is it is also narrow. It was narrow against West Brom, and they'll feel hard done by numerous occasions. And then obviously to be without Van Dijk is also a big challenge for them. So there's number of small factors which probably made quite a big difference to this team. But no one felt it more, like you say, than the Southampton side, who played the most number of fixtures in the shortest amount of time. And again, it feels really unfair.
It does. I mean, Dave, Lawrence mentioned there they're missing Van Dijk. Do you think it could get worse for them with the former Celtic player continuing to be linked to a move away from Southampton? I mean, are they really going to sell him mid-season? Or do you think, you know, they can't really turn down if Chelsea, if Man City, say, come in with the sort of money that's being rumoured? We're talking 50, maybe even 60 million.
If I were them, I'd hold on to him because he's a top, top player and he's going to be going to one of the creme de la creme clubs of European football. But you massively saw him not being there today, how poorly they were at the back. You know, you look at the penalty incident, so they lacked that coolness that Van Dijk sort of brings. You know, he's not diving in. Yoshida, as soon as he saw the ball, he went in and you know, cleaning out Ener Valencia, instant penalty, very, very stupid. And then the third goal again, Jose Font bringing the ball out the back. That's another thing that Van Dijk does very well, is bring the ball out the back. And with Font having to be that player and be that man who's hit some pretty poor form, you know, there's been rumours that post European Championship win that his attitude isn't good enough anymore, Jose Font. He's not trying in training. And his performances have been reflected on the pitch this season. And again, he was so, so poor bringing the ball out. Instantly Everton turn it over and then they score from that. Like, they score from the next play. So both in terms of the rashness of the two centre-backs and then they're lacking their ability and decision-making. That's what Van Dijk is. He's the perfect player in terms of decision-making, both in a defensive sense and in an offensive sense when he's carrying the ball. So again, massively missed. And if he does leave Southampton in the, you know, in this winter window, big, big, big problems for Ronald Koeman.
Sixth. Wow.
Sorry.
Claude. Wow. Ronald Koeman won't give a fuck.
Ronald Koeman might
60 million, though, can you imagine, for Van Dijk? That would be pretty sensational.
What's money? Carlos Tevez, 72 million. He's 32 years old.
Yeah, that one's
it's also very weird, because when you listen to Tim Vickery talk about it, it's such an unusual situation that Carlos Tevez finds himself in, because he said, oh, I never want to leave. I don't want to go.
Say no, though.
Said
how much?
money could never get rid of, money could never take away the love that I have for this club. And then
that much money, though. Crikey.
I mean, to be fair, apparently he got married in recent, he just got married, and then also was burgled the same time he was getting married.
Mm. It was renewing his vows with his childhood sweetheart. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Because hey. He'd been caught playing away. No. And so he renewed his vows. But the whole thing reminds me of that scene.
Moving to China will help that.
With Darren Lamb, where they ring up and he says, how much? You got more money than sense, mate.
Yeah, very true.
Oh, you can't begrudge Tevez that. But,
no, you can't. I mean, he's been a fantastic servant.
If he does stay, the thing is that there was a report coming around today that the Chinese club in question have paid a decent transfer fee to Boca Juniors as well. And if he doesn't stay the full 2 years, Boca have to pay a good portion of that fee back to the Chinese club.
Very interesting.
Axel Witsel's the next one, apparently, on his way.
He's gone for 20 million.
Has he? Fair play.
Yeah. Fair play.
Yeah, Tevez is now, is he the third most expensive player in the world? No, in terms of his transfer fee was, as Dave said, was it 70 million or something? Crazy?
72, apparently. Jesus. All rumours.
Those are the rumours.
We rate them, so they all right.
Guys, let's talk about West Brom. They comfortably beat Hull City
3-1. How many Carlos is it out of five?
Ooh, Dave. First of all, it's very rude to steal someone else's punchline.
this format's totally different. It's got a green buzzer.
That's very good point. Wee. Lovely behind-the-scenes football fans.
Oh, inside baseball. Guys.
I'd give it five. I'd say he's going to go to China.
I think he's already gone. Listen.
Oh, mate. Was I right or was I right?
As interesting as Carlos Tevez is.
He's not actually. He's on his honeymoon.
I want to talk about West Brom, guys. I want to talk about Tony Pulis. They've secured back-to-back wins, West Brom, for only the second time this season. A 3-1 win against Hull after a resurgent second-half performance. Feels like they're maybe going under the radar a little bit. They're now on 29 points. They are 10 points off the top six, but as I said, the top six are becoming a little bit of a mini league in their own right. They're only 1 point behind Everton, though, in seventh. Who wants to show West Brom and Tony Pulis some love? Come on, guys.
Who doesn't, mate?
There's only one man, Adam. There's only one man.
Yeah?
Yeah, send over, mate.
Come on, then.
Come on, then. Well, I think this season's shown that the old dogs still have some tricks left, obviously, with David Moyes doing all right with Sunderland, pulling a few poor performances out of the bag. But Tony Pulis at West Brom. West Brom have been one of the form sides in the last month and a half in the Premier League, and they look so good going forward in terms of what they do. And it's cross the ball. It's simple. It's effective. It's what Tony Pulis has done his whole career. Target man up top, and then a tricky winger to get crosses into the box. And it's simple. I mean, Matty Phillips, they've got a player that's in form. Only Kevin De Bruyne has more assists in the Premier League this season than Matty Phillips. Wow. I think he's finally maturing as a player. And he's two crosses for the goal, both from corners, both from set pieces. But they were classic Tony Pulis goals. You go back and look at the stats. Tony Pulis, Stoke, were one of the most effective teams from set pieces. They every single season, they'd be top scorers from set pieces. And now we're seeing that at West Brom. So I think it's Tony Pulis weaving his magic again and building a side that can attack, that is a little bit more interchangeable. You know, you've got the likes of Chadley in there as well, and obviously Robson Kanu that came on, James Morrison, Rondon. It's looking like a very, very strong side, and a side that's definitely going to be in the top half of the Premier League come the end of the season. I just love it. Tony's just back,
love it.
David's back, and Big Sam all together finally as one.
Weaving their magic in many ways.
All of them with their temporary fixes that we love so much.
Yeah. Finally today, we had Middlesbrough drawing 0-0 with Leicester City at home. I thought I'd put the time in to watch this one, so you know I could talk about this game. Seriously, really lucky, terrible game. A handful of half chances, not much else. Most interesting incident probably was in the first half. Middlesbrough probably should have had a penalty when Robert Huth checked Adam Traore. Huth admitting as much that the decision was lucky, essentially, for Leicester. But overwhelming sense that both sides lacked the final idea, the final ball, that clinical edge to make the most of the chances they had. A point will do both teams, though. Borough now four clear of the bottom three. Leicester six clear, although they're now obviously going to be without Riyad Mahrez until potentially early February because of the African Cup of Nations. He did look like the most dangerous player for the champions, a potential outlet for them. So it could be a blow, although Jamie Vardy, of course, is returning from injury. Let's finally, before we close out the podcast, let's preview tomorrow's games. Three Premier League games going on. First up, Arsenal playing again tomorrow at Bournemouth. We should probably talk about their previous result, though, against Crystal Palace, Dave. All anyone's talking about from this one is, of course, Olivier Giroud's finish for the opener. Where do you sit on this one? Is it better than Mkhitaryan's, which doesn't count anyway because it was offside?
I think they're both good goals in their own right. I quite like what Olivier Giroud did. I think it's slightly different goal in a way that Mkhitaryan was probably more of a scorpion kick where he was going to ground and his legs were coming over, whereas Giroud was more of maybe a volleyed back heel, but they were both absolutely fantastic goals. I think we can't take. I think they're both good in their own right. I'm not sure which one's my favourite. I like
Giroud's,
both,
mate. Any
like
day of the week is Olivier Giroud's.
Absolutely mate, the overall move for Olivier Giroud's.
In sensation.
But then the originality of what Mkhitaryan originally, because I feel like Giroud's just ripped
Giroud
it off.
Giroud just copied it. He was inspired, wasn't he?
I think Giroud saw it and then in training has obviously been practicing.
Yeah, but
Giroud's
went off the bar. Any goal that goes in off the bar is.
It's also that. Yeah,
better.
Yeah. All right, Mark Chapman. It's also that the fact that Giroud is not the most likable character. Mkhitaryan is a likable character,
no, you
despite
can't start
his Manchester
that into
United. Mate, I'm reffing by the player, not the situation. All right, it's true. Mkhitaryan's a likable guy. Giroud is.
Giroud's quite likable. What's wrong with him? Apart from that time that he cheated on his girlfriend.
Allegedly.
I like Olivier Giroud. I think you know he came into the team, and he took his chance. What a fantastic goal! You know.
I guarantee you that if next week he misses three chances, Arsenal fans will be calling for him to go.
Yeah, get rid, lad.
Get rid. He's not worth it.
Either way, spectacular goal. I thought it was a nice touch that, obviously, Giroud scoring that goal in January. December's goal of the month was awarded to Henrik Mkhitaryan, of course, for that scorpion kick. But he also shared the honour with Bradley Lowry, I believe. Who was obviously a cancer victim, a Sunderland fan, who came on and scored a penalty against Asmir Begovic, I believe, earlier in the month. So a nice gesture there to see them share the Goal of the Month award. Olivier Giroud, pretty much a lock for January, I think. Either way, they are playing Eddie Howe's side tomorrow. They obviously beat
Asmir Begovic. He's having a tough time of it.
He is indeed. Obviously, they beat Swansea 3-0 on New Year's Eve. Bournemouth been very inconsistent, though. Chris, are you going to back Arsenal to make it three wins in a row on this one?
Who are they facing?
Bournemouth. Big Bournemouth. Inconsistent Bournemouth, you know. Up and down.
Yeah,
Arsenal,
that's the problem.
Putting the run
they
together.
They are inconsistent, and they're going to be missing Jack Wilshere as well, which is... I'm going to say they do it.
Olivier Giroud with another scorpion kick, no doubt. But yeah.
How do you think this is the next big trend?
What, scorpion kicks? It is pretty ridiculous to have two in this space of 1 week.
I tell you what, if Wayne Rooney scores a scorpion kick, we will reopen the debate as to whether Wayne Rooney is truly over.
if
he scored a scorpion kick, it would truly prove all those doubters wrong.
Oh, yeah. What do you like better, an overhead kick or a scorpion kick? What's more impressive?
I don't know, man. The way that Giroud touches that ball for that scorpion kick and... Just hurling of a heel.
I can't help but feel this scorpion kick, as impressive as it is, as majestic as it is, there is also an element of luck.
Yeah, but that's the same. It's the same with overhead kicks.
No, if you do an overhead kick, you are facing the way you're going. You know what you're doing. Your body shape's all about kicking it where you're going to kick it, apart from Wayne Rooney, who shinned it. But with a scorpion kick, you don't know 100% where it's going to go, I feel like. You know?
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, I mean, Giroud knew what he was doing. Do you know what I mean? So it's the same as with... It's no, I mean, that's...
But there's more of an element of luck than a bicycle kick, than a scissor kick, you know?
Yeah, there's more elements of luck, but then maybe that makes you more daring. And it's also the perfect combination of overhead kick and diving header.
Ooh, lovely, yeah.
Because it looks like a diving header, but it is essentially a kick from over the head. Although sometimes you could call it a level head kick.
I think just scorpion kick would be... If Arsenal do win this one against Bournemouth,
incredible level out.
Arsenal, they can jump ahead of Manchester City. They can go back third in the table if they do win this one against Bournemouth. So they'll be looking to get 3 points against the Cherries. Also tomorrow, Crystal Palace against Swansea. Big Sam still looking for his first win. You would probably count on them getting the 3 points here, though, Lawrence, against the Swansea side, who are showing no signs of recovery, not until potentially Paul Clement comes in. He is set to take the job at Swansea. Bayern gave him permission to talk about the vacant manager position. Has apparently agreed a three-year deal. So until then, you're not going to give much hope to Swansea in this one, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the game that Big Sam will be earmarked to win. I liked his comments the other day where he said post-match, we won't know until March whether it's going to be a difficult season or not. And I thought, you've really bought yourself time there. That is lovely. But yeah, credit to him. And also now this podcast utterly resents Swansea because of the way they treated our Bob.
Do we resent Swansea?
We do. The way they treated Bob.
Okay. Okay, that's the official podcast stance. You hope they get relegated? Harsh. Harsh but fair. Should have given him a window. Should have given him a window.
At least a window. But instead they showed him the door.
Paul Clement, though. Interesting appointment. Dave, from his point of view, I'm not quite sure why he's taking it, because I feel like in many ways, and I feel like his reputation is delicately poised. You know, he's obviously a very successful number two with Carlo Ancelotti, worked at him at a number of clubs, obviously previously managed at Derby, but this, you know, this could be the sort of job that defines your managerial career. You know, Ryan Giggs potentially would have been, I don't think he would have taken this job even if it was offered to him, because you know, he could be the man that takes Swansea down. Could that be the case for Paul Clement?
Yeah, it's a ticking time bomb. I won't take the job. I'd stay at Bayern Munich and win the Champions League with Carlo Ancelotti again. It's absolutely crazy. But yeah, I think that with Paul Clement, the Derby job was kind of a good job and it didn't kind of work out there for, you know, whatever reason. And this is a difficult one. If he keeps Swansea up, he's an absolute messiah. Maybe he'll have to loan some players from Bayern Munich in the window. Maybe that's what Carlo and
Alonso,
Xabi Alonso, imagine? Thomas Muller. Maybe that's the deal.
Yeah, realistic. Interesting appointment, though. I like Paul Clement. I wish him the best. But I think it's a very difficult job to take on, as Bob Bradley, found out.
Bob Brownlee.
Final game tomorrow, Stoke City against Watford. A Watford side who haven't won in four, Stoke side who haven't won in five. Feel like Mark Hughes is starting to come under pressure, Lawrence. He had a reasonably successful run earlier in the season. A lot of expectation potentially placed upon Stoke after that. But now, as I said, without a win in five, you feel like they need this one, don't they, at home?
Yeah, although I still think they've afforded themselves time because of the performances they put in during those games. They've run a lot of those sides very close, and the position they find themselves in the table means, is it really that bad? Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, they're on 21 points, six ahead of Sunderland.
To be fair, they played Arsenal, Liverpool, and Chelsea in that run.
Yeah, so that's the problem essentially, is that in those games when they could have been rebounding, they've actually expended a lot of energy on just losing games. Some people would say that Mark Hughes is unrealistic for trying to do that, but at the same time, they would have castigated him if he hadn't have rotated somewhat, brought Crouch into the side, and essentially given themselves a good idea of what they are going to do against Watford. And I actually think Crouch will be much more effective against the likes of Watford than he was against some more experienced defences. And I think if Stoke score first in this one, we might see a similar thing happen than what happened against Arsenal.
Well, guys,
Yunus Kabul. That's just what we're going to end on.
Hey, he scored. The lad can't defend. He can't defend, but he did score against Spurs. You know.
Did you see his defending? Was it the third goal where
passed it to Dele Alli, basically?
Yeah, he makes a terrible, terrible error. You know, should really kill the ball and clear it. Messes up and then defensively just stays where he is. Doesn't make any recovery movement. Just stands still.
Spurs fans found that quite delicious, I'm going to say, because he sort of called out Pochettino ahead of the game, saying that he hadn't shown him any respect before he shipped him off. And I think, you know, Spurs fans sort of said, that's probably why, mate, because you're no good.
Well, I mean, he was also part of the bomb squad, as they called him, at Spurs. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't going to last at Spurs, I think, you know. He's found his level.
All right, mate. Oh, harsh.
Harsh, but fair. Guys, that brings an end.
Stop saying but
to
fair,
our Premier League review. Technically, though, it's true, you know, so I can get away with it.
I think there's something I do want to talk about, which no one else has sort of mentioned.
Before anywhere. We finish up, come on, here's.
Yeah. Anyone else seen this clip that's been going around of a player doing a spell on the line against
in the Premier League
team somewhere in Africa?
Oh, okay.
No, Adam, don't say somewhere. Like, okay, as if you expect that to happen in Africa.
No.
Harsh but fair. Then going away and scoring minutes later. And since, the said Football Federation has banned black magic from the pitch.
Wow. So, wait.
When I say black magic, I mean...
Witchcraft.
Witchcraft in that sense, yeah.
Wow, so he actually... He
performed, it's a phrase in England. It's not a racially charged thing. I just want to make that very clear.
He performed a ritual mid-game, and you're saying within minutes he'd scored.
He put his hand down on the line, says a few words, and then runs away. And the goalkeeper... The thing is, the way the goalkeeper reacts, he almost buys into the whole thing, sort of running towards him, like, no, no! And then minutes later, the player scores.
Do you believe it was witchcraft? Or is it a coincidence?
Oh, mate, he scored 5 scorpion kicks later in the game.
Just moments later.
It was 10.
Yeah. No, wow. No, I mean, that's the thing. They've written it into the law now. Now, there's so many ways we could attack this. First of all, should witchcraft or any sort of magic be allowed in the game?
Depends on if it's real or not. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, that's the problem. Real. Is if you buy into it, then it's real. If you don't buy into it, then it's not. It's the same. It's a sort of the same. I mean, you could argue it's the same as saying, you know, should a player be allowed to do the cross on himself because he's bringing God into the game?
Interesting.
But then God's everywhere. Parallel. So, you know, is he allowed? Are players allowed to do that? If another player says, "I curse you using the power of blah blah blah." You know, is that so?
Is witchcraft a religion, though?
I mean, it's...
Is using witchcraft a religious act?
It depends. It would totally depend on the Football Association.
Is paganism a religion?
And which... I mean, paganism is technically a religion, yeah.
Wow.
Because you believe in something. I mean...
So you could, because, like you say, you can do the cross on the pitch. There are other religious expressions. Why not witchcraft?
Why not witchcraft? Why not? That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not being disrespectful in that sense, saying that witchcraft is the same level as some other people's religions, but you know what I mean.
But can you outlaw something or punish the use of something which isn't real? Like if I went on the pitch I'll call upon my leprechaun friends to come and help me score.
Yeah.
And then I scored and said it was because of the leprechauns.
Yeah.
Could they outlaw that? But it wasn't real.
What? Adam,
are you drunk again?
Yeah, but Adam, could you technically outlaw the use of, you know, the 12th man? Because that, you know, it could be the spirit of the 12th man that's on the pitch.
Like a ghost?
Yeah, like a ghost.
I'm not sure.
I mean, I guess what they're doing is that, you know, it's very different from saying your own... I mean, it isn't really. I mean, if another player from the other side catches you saying a few words to yourself before the game, and say that they happen to be words of a certain orientation, then is that against the rules? It's not as fun now. I've sort of gone down this. I was going to sort of ask if anyone in the Premier League was to do magic, what kind of magic do you think they'd do? I think Klopp would be like a sort of a happy fairy, and I think Mourinho would be like a bit of a shape-shifting witch.
What if they could?
Did you eat some brownies halfway through the podcast, mate?
No, Dave. I've become a footballing warlock or whatever it is.
Yeah, warlock's good.
I think there are probably some warlocks out there that are utterly offended by what we're saying and what's happened in that league. Mm. Apparently, you know, people have been quite up in arms about it.
If you were going to level the accusation of witchcraft at one Premier League manager or player,
Alan Pardew.
Yeah.
Every time.
But surely it hasn't worked for him because, you know, look at the situation he's got himself in. I mean, a manager or a player who is quite clearly performing above a natural level.
Spell only lasts so long.
You know?
Adam, are you insinuating the use of drugs here and trying to accuse a player of drugs?
No, the use of witchcraft, which is clearly a real thing because it's been outlawed in Rwanda. So therefore,
it is Rwanda, right? Yeah.
Therefore, you know, I reckon who performs above a natural level, but not with the use of any sort of stimulants, just, you know, good old fashioned witchcraft. Sami Nasri prefers IV drips, doesn't he? He goes the medical route.
I mean, he's tried a couple of different women.
Maybe Diego Costa. Look at how different he's performing this season to last season. You know, is that natural?
Is that's he motivation, using though.
You what?
That's motivation.
Yeah, maybe it's witchcraft. We'll never know.
Now it just sounds like we're using this to accuse players of using.
No, I'm coming at it from a purely, you know, non-stimulant. Magical perspective. You're throwing insinuations in there, guys. I think we need to leave it open to the audience, guys. If you think someone is using witchcraft in the Premier League, and I think there's a very high possibility that they are.
I mean, do you remember that time when someone cursed a ground? I can't remember it. Chris, you're the kind of person who remembers these sort of stories.
Wasn't it like
there was someone who cursed a ground, and a manager got a number of different people in to try and take the curse away. He pissed
Glenn
in all four.
Wasn't it?
Was it Glenn Hoddle? And he pissed in all four corners of the ground.
Maybe Glenn Hoddle. He did some crazy shit when he was manager of England and Tottenham.
Yeah, no, that's
it was
a whole
Birmingham
other,
City.
That's a
doing my research because I didn't want to slander Glenn Hoddle with accusations of pissing in the corner of four grounds. Maybe he did do that, I don't know, but it seems that Birmingham City used to have a curse.
Had an 100-year gypsy curse.
Turned on them by a band of gypsies, as they do. Spat out the curse in 1906 and it stayed with Birmingham to this very day. The litany of bad luck is woven into the club's very fabric, and that is a fact. See, witchcraft does exist.
But it was a 100-year curse, and it's over now.
Oh, it's done because the manager lifted it by urinating in each corner of the ground. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
Why wouldn't it work?
But yeah,
just makes sense. Oh, because Birmingham won at Wembley in 2011 against Arsenal in the Carling Cup final. That was when the curse was lifted, apparently.
Not when he pissed in the four corners.
Maybe it was a byproduct of that.
One directly led to the other, is what many people would say.
Former manager Ron Saunders ordered crucifixes to be placed on the floodlights and for the soles of his players' boots to be painted red. That proved unsuccessful.
Shortly before he was put on gardening leave, I imagine. Yeah.
I think he misinterpreted what saving the souls of football players meant.
His successor, Barry Fry, went one step further, urinating in all four corners of the pitch after 3 months without winning a game.
Did anyone tell them to do this? It just sounds like Barry Fry being weird.
It sounds like an Aston Villa fan's heard it and gone, yeah, I've heard you need to piss in all four corners of the ground, Barry. Oh, so it stinks for the games. Yeah, exactly, Barry. So it stinks.
This. After 3 months without winning a game, Birmingham City started to turn things around. I thought it had worked, mused manager Barry Fry when asked if he thought his drastic actions had worked. Then they sacked me, though, so probably not. There you go, the story.
So I took a shit in my office.
Oh, God.
So I peed blood all the way down the corridor.
Pissed in my top drawer of my desk so that I could at least leave the club with some better fortune.
Was it Gus Poyet who maybe that was witchcraft when he
left? It wasn't Gus Poyet who did it, but it was Gus Poyet's Brighton side that shit in the dressing room.
See, witchcraft is everywhere in football. You just don't realise it. It's touched all corners of the game.
It's just different forms of it. Modern forms of witchcraft.
Mm. And on that note,
what's your favourite form of witchcraft? Hashtag I am the magic.
Hashtag I am
Premier League manager, do you like to piss in the four corners of your ground?
Yeah. Which one do you think has, you know?
It wouldn't surprise me if Jurgen Klopp had pissed on the grass at Anfield.
Oh, yeah. He's the type. Guys, that brings it into
that
our
time that Charlton did a marketing campaign in which they released a video of two people having sex in the centre circle.
They were promoting pitch art.
Was that real or was that fake?
What's that got to do with magic?
They made it seem like it was real. They made it seem like they caught these two people.
Charlton deliberately did this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember that, but I thought I always remember them sort of vehemently denying it afterwards.
Good marketing. I mean,
to be fair, I think, you know, there's also times when maybe certain clubs have pissed, say, 35 million up the wall over Andy Carroll.
Yeah. Moussa Sissoko, you know.
There you go.
Guys, let's end it there. I can't think of a better moment to end the podcast on. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you had a great new year. Hope you had a great Christmas as well. Looking forward to a big 2017. Hope you keep listening to us. Make sure you check out the YouTube channel as well. Big stuff coming. But until Thursday, when we'll be back on the podcast.
That's, by the way, that's not what the channel is called. Okay, I just want to make that very clear. Big stuff coming is not what the channel is named.
If you need to clarify that, please do.
But there's also one other thing I think we should finish on. There's a really lovely picture of Zlatan Ibrahimovic standing in between the bubbles at West Ham. It's just funny. He just looks really, disinterested by the whole situation.
Just tweet out, Lawrence. Tweet out so people can.
All right. Well, I will. Well, it's a Manchester United picture. I'll screenshot it and I'll send it to you guys. Yeah.
Beautiful. Dave, until Thursday, where can people find you?
Google. Best place. Statman Dave. Simple as pie.
Simple as pie. Chris?
The front three, at the front three, more specifically.
Beautiful. Lawrence?
At Lozcast, LOZCAST.
You can follow me on Twitter, at Adam Boltwood, or at the front three. Do go and check us out there. Leave us your reviews on iTunes if you would be so kind.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Till Thursday, have a bloody great week, and come on, you Spurs. Bit biased, but oh well.